Good morning. Today's reading is taken from The Quest for Corvo by A.J. A. Simmons, beginning at chapter 2. Millard was very willing to tell me what he knew about Frederick Rolfe, whose life and books had formed one of his main amusements for many years. First, he produced the originals of the Venice letters, which I had read in typescript. They were hardly less surprising in their physical form than in their content, written on paper of the oddest shapes and sizes, in the most beautiful handwriting I had ever seen, in red, blue, green, purple and black inks, presumably chosen as occasion chanced. So far as appearance went, they were not unworthy of the author of Hadrian, but I could not resist a shudder at the sight of those cries from the depths. Next, Millard handed me a proof of Mr. Leslie's account of Rolfe, and finally a batch of letters and press cuttings which it had evoked. I lost no time in examining the dossier. Earliest in point of date came a cutting from the Star newspaper of October 29, 1913, which read, "A curiously interesting and most mysterious character has passed away in the person of Mr. Frederick Rolfe, who was found dead in his bed at Venice a few mornings since. Mr. Rolfe was the author, under his own name, of various novels, in which an extraordinary amount of very ill-assimilated learning was displayed, and the life of the Italian priesthood, rural as well as at the Curia, was portrayed with an insight and appearance of exact knowledge which impressed the critics. Under the name of Baron Corvo, an Italian title which he claimed to have acquired through the gift of some estates by a former Duchess of Sforza, Cesarini, he wrote verses and controversial articles on Catholic ritual and Italian politics. He used to state that he had been at one time in priest's orders, but this, we believe, was denied by the authorities of his church. A devout Catholic in doctrine, he was at issue with the hierarchy over Italian matters, being a strong opponent of the temporal power. He compiled an elaborate genealogical table to show that the King of Italy was the legitimate King of England, and fantastic as the idea may appear, the scholarship and research involved were frankly acknowledged by antiquarian and heraldic criticism. Mr. Rolfe resided for some years as Baron Corvo at Christchurch, Hampshire, where he was noted for outbursts of elaborate expenditure, alternating with an extreme asceticism. Latterly at Venice, he had led a life of the latter character exclusively. He will, perhaps, chiefly be remembered for his Stories Toto Told Me, a volume of contes which is remarkably illustrative of Italian peasant life. Next, I turned to Mr. Leslie's article, which I read with close attention. Again, I was astonished, and an underlying note of sarcasm which I had half felt in the Star report was explained. Curiously interesting and almost mysterious were understatements when applied to Rolfe. His career was at least as extraordinary as his book. His adventures matched those of Gil Blas. I began to see why his name was not remembered. Apparently he had passed through life in a state of opposition and exasperation, giving and taking offence without cause or scruple, until even his friends feared and avoided him. Despite Mr. Leslie's epigrammatic sparkle and amusing verve, the tale of Rolfe's tribulations, self-caused though they largely were, made very melancholy reading. Here was indeed a tragic comedy, more sombre and fantastic than I had expected or hoped. From the beginning, it seemed, this unfortunate man's temperament and circumstances had warred with his talent. Frustration and poverty had been the condition of his early years as of his last. Tutorships, odd jobs and charity were the actual lot of the dreamer who, in his dreams, had ruled the world. It was not in Venice only that he had starved. Such hardships and disappointments would have turned most men crazy. Small wonder that in the end friendship with Rolfe became a minor experiment in demonology. I concurred, as I read in Mr. Leslie's verdict, a self-tortured and defeated soul who might have done much had he been born in the proper era or surroundings. But though I concurred in his verdict, there were a dozen tantalising gaps in his narrative which left my curiosity rampant. What was Rolfe's lineage or upbringing? How had he come to be so strangely stranded in Venice? Could nothing more have been done to help a man whose talent must have been obvious? Obstinate indeed, as well as obvious, for in the course of a life which can have had few equals for uncertainty and discomfort, Frederick Rolfe had somehow contrived to produce at least 4 books, books which sounded, in Mr. Leslie's descriptions, hardly less interesting than the one I already knew. Here ends the reading. Have a very good day.